Welcome to the Awakened Pregnancy Podcast. I am your host, conception, pregnancy, and motherhood coach, Kate Cattle. Each week, alongside my captivating guests, I bring you a variety of topics to support your own mama awakening. From preconception to motherhood, this podcast is for the mama or mama-to-be who knows deep down that this is just the beginning for her. Hello and welcome to another episode of the Awaken Pregnancy Podcast. It is so beautiful to have you here with me today, and I have two wonderful guests to share with you that I cannot wait to introduce. This is the first time I've done an interview with two guests at the same time, and it was lots of fun. There's beautiful energy, and I know you're going to get a lot from this episode. So I am speaking today to Jacqueline Alwill and Brittany Darling from Day One Fertility. So with 5 children and 20 plus years experience in the health industry between them, Jack and Britt know a thing or two about nutrition, optimizing fertility, and parenting. But when they first started out, they too felt the overwhelm and lack of credible resources to truly feel empowered by nutrition for fertility. They value evidence-based nutrition and have combined the science with their practical experience as mothers to deliver you a series of in-depth courses in nutrition for fertility at Day One. Jacqueline Alwill is an accredited nutritionist with a special interest in fertility and early childhood nutrition. She takes a practical, evidence-based approach to delivering information, developing programs, and recipes for children. Jack also has 3 children, and she feels very at home in the kitchen and loves to be at the beach with her family. Brittany Darling is an award-winning clinical accredited nutritionist and Western herbalist with 10 plus years experience, and is also a mama with 2 beautiful children. Brittany has a special interest in the areas of fertility, prenatal and postnatal, and pediatric nutrition. She is the founder of a children's supplement company called I'm Nutrients and the recipient of 2 awards for her work, ATMS's Highly Commended Practitioner of the Year 2021 and Lux Life's Nutritionist of the Year 2022. I'm so excited to share these gorgeous women with you today. We speak about a range of different things, but the key focus in today's episode is on how to prepare your body for conception through nutrition, or how you can use nutrition to support you with getting that ultimate goal of conception and a beautiful, healthy baby on the other side. So we speak about that preconception nutrition piece and how important nutrition is during that time and what we can be doing and implementing right away to support us towards our goal. We talk about supplementation and what is actually required for us during our preconception period as far as supplementation. And we cut through a little bit of the noise that is in the industry right now. If you've ever been somebody who has taken a lot of supplements and really despised that experience, you're going to find this conversation interesting. The ladies also talk us through the experience of nourishing ourselves through our reproductive years and really cut through the noise around what the industry is saying at the moment, which is a whole lot of things. So if you have been feeling confused about the best way to serve and support yourself in your reproductive years, there's a lot in this episode that's going to support you to find clarity and direction. We also talk about pregnancy and how our nutritional needs change during that time, including the caloric intake requirements from first trimester through to fourth trimester. And to wrap up, we talk about a few beautiful recipes and meal ideas that you can implement today, this weekend, to help improve your fertility and your conception experience. It was so wonderful to have the ladies on the show. I know you're going to love this really practical, supportive episode and how it's going to give you some really great tools that you can implement literally today. I hope you enjoy. Welcome, Brittany and Jacqueline, to the Awaken Pregnancy Podcast. It is so great to have you here today.
Thanks for having us.
Excited to be here.
Such a pleasure. So much fun. I can't wait to dive in. I am really loving following the Day One Fertility journey. I'm just like, I feel like there's such a beautiful marriage in what I teach and what you teach that I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. And like, funny story for the listeners, I literally proposed to Brittany and Jacqueline in DMs in order to get them on this show. So our wedding will be soon and you're all invited.
Oh, that's so nice to hear. Thank you.
Proposal accepted. Yeah.
So funny. So let's talk a little bit about preconception nutrition here. I'd love to hear from you guys, what is most important nutritionally in that time? Like, where do we specifically need to focus? How do we get in what we need to get in? And how can we also keep it as simple as possible? Because, like, let's be honest, the nutrition world right now, or at least the online world in relation to nutrition, has a lot of messages. So yeah, what do you guys have to say about all of that?
That's a really good question to kick off with. And certainly let's make sure we bring this back to really simple foundations for people out there trying to conceive, because as you say, it can get all a bit confusing. Look, we know that the diet and lifestyle of both the mother and father 6 months prior to conception can impact a child's lifelong health. So when we speak of preconception nutrition, we really want to reinforce the importance of allowing a full 6 month preconception period, which we call the trimester, to do the necessary investigations. So things like blood tests for both parents, to balance elements of, diet, lifestyle, perhaps weight, for instance, to nourish our bodies with high quality nutrition in diet and supplements, and then to reduce things like toxins, so in your home or work environment, in your skincare, how and what you're cooking with, etc. And we use this four-step tried and tested approach with all of our clients at Day One Fertility over this preconception phase. But with regard to diet, you can make some really simple changes to improve your fertility. And in a Harvard University review, which was based on a landmark study, landmark nurses' health study, there were 6 dietary tweaks which they identified can improve your fertility by up to 67%. So these 6 tweaks were, firstly, to avoid trans fats. So these are present in things like margarines, your vegan butter, commercial cakes, pastries, cookies, and what have you. Often some of those tasty foods, but definitely ones to limit. And these trans fats actually threaten fertility by harming both, your blood vessels and the heart, and they can cause significant inflammation in the body. So keeping those out.
Can I just ask you there, when you're speaking about these changes, do you know if this study was specifically for women or it's for like men and women?
The data was pulled from the NHS Nurses Health 2 study. So it was done specifically on women, this one in particular.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was a huge study though, wasn't it, Britt? It was about 18,000 women that they pulled in, yeah?
Yeah, and I think the data that's been pulled from there is probably one of the most solid, data sets that we have in terms of fertility research because of the high numbers of the subjects.
How good is that? That's amazing. So great to have access to these kind of studies. I think I've seen you guys speak about it before, that we don't often get nutritional based studies because the funding isn't there. So yeah, it's amazing that we have access to this information. So sorry I interrupted, Jackie, but I did want to I wanted to jump in and ask that one. So I'll let you continue, because I'm like sitting on the edge of my seat. What else am I doing?
Okay, so avoiding trans fats. Next would be increasing your healthy fats. And we talk about this a lot generally in health, but certainly those mono and polyunsaturated fats can actually help reduce inflammation and improve the body's sensitivity to insulin, which are both really positive aspects in fertility. So a focus on lots more olive oil, nuts, seeds, salmon, sardines, and avocado, which are all delicious. So hopefully that makes it easy for people. The findings of the study was to make sure that you're really bumping up your intake of vegetable-based proteins. So replacing a serving of meat each day with things like beans, peas, tofu, and nuts, which has been shown to have really favorable fertility outcomes.
Amazing. Then also, I haven't heard something like that before. The first two I've heard that before, but I haven't so much heard that with meat. That's interesting.
Yeah, well, I think the research, there's more and more research coming out, certainly around red meat and its the different impacts it's having on people's health. So it's, again, it's...
There's a couple of components with the red meat, if I can just jump in. And, I'm the biggest lover of steak, so this was kind of really sad news for me. I'm a lover of red meat. But it's not about completely avoiding it. It's just reducing your intake. So once a week, maybe twice a week, having it is absolutely fine. But it's also how we cook it. So what we know is when you barbecue and charcoal meats in particular, it creates these toxins called AGEs, or advanced glycation end products, which we know specifically damage egg quality. They produce oxidative stress in the body, and they're really, really detrimental to fertility. So I think it's the amount of red meat that we need to reduce, and also be cautious of how we're cooking it. So using things like slow cooks, if you are going to have red meat, that may be better, or adding lots of antioxidant-rich spice rubs and herbs and olive oil and things like that to help offset those carcinogens and those toxins that affect egg quality.
That's such a beautiful approach too, Brittany, that you've brought up there around, you know, often we can hear these things of like, okay, so reduce red meat, for example, and have more plant-based protein. And we can take that as so literal as like, okay, red meat bad, plant protein good, and just like literally go that, you know, I guess strict with it. But I think it's so beautiful to really allow ourselves to recognize it's not that black and white. It's actually, it can actually be more about how much you're having it. So yeah, thank you for highlighting that. That's beautiful.
I think the beauty also, as you mentioned with slow cooks as well, is you've got the opportunity to add in heaps of vegetables and beans in with your meat. Mm. So, you know, there you don't have to have that all or nothing approach. You can still have a little taste of what you enjoy, but making sure you're, you know, crowding the dish with other really beneficial nutrients for your and foods for your fertility as well.
Amazing.
One of the other tweaks that was suggested is that you choose slow, not low carbs. So these are really rich in fiber. So things like our whole grains, starchy veg, whole fruit, legumes, and reducing these, you know, fast and ultra processed carbs, which are really common in the standard Australian diet, standard American diet, certainly. And these changes can help improve fertility by helping to balance blood sugar and insulin too.
It's interesting that you talk about fiber, Jack. I'm just going to jump in and talk about fiber and how important it is for the gut microbiome. So we know that women who consume enough fiber, their gut microbiome and also their vaginal microbiome tends to be more balanced. So a vaginal microbiome that's considered healthy is lactobacillus predominant. And interestingly, same goes with the seminal microbiome. So that lactobacillus predominant seminal fluid also is beneficial and helps with fertility. So fiber is the key thing to fuel our good bugs, whether it's in our gut, our vagina. So really making sure we're having those good complex carbs is important for so many aspects of health.
That's amazing. It continues to, the more research that comes out, the more that we understand about microbiome in general, I'm just so amazed by this like universe that lives within us and like the complexity of that. It's just incredible.
It's fascinating, isn't it? And it is so easy to make these small tweaks for people, and knowing that it can have such a positive impact on their health and fertility as well. And I think that's the constant message that we try to reinforce.
Yeah, and especially when it's backed by science, I think that this is something that can really help with that decision-making process around, you know, how to best support ourselves, you know, with nutrition. Because, you know, there is so much noise out there right now and everyone's so convincing in what they share. And, you know, to know that there is some research behind this, that it has a significant impact on fertility. It's like, okay, well, I know that if I'm doing this, I'm at least making, you know, the best choices that I can make to support myself, and that evidence is proving that for me.
Definitely.
Totally.
There are two more things that we would love to suggest here as well.
Yes, keep going.
And that is making sure that people are getting plenty of plant-based iron. You know, we've spoken about how you may need to adjust your intake of red meat, but iron's a really important micronutrient in fertility, and certainly when you fall pregnant. So ensuring that you're starting to integrate more of these plant-based sources of iron into the diet, and that's from things like your legumes, again, our hero food of the fertility world, spinach, tofu, tempeh, beets, and whole grains also helps to promote fertility. And finally, drinking to your health. So water, tea, coffee, but not hammering your diet with heaps of caffeine. Have the occasional wine and enjoy yourself. But avoid those sugary sodas or soft drinks, which appear to promote ovulatory infertility as well.
Very interesting. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. I've been taking notes personally, and I'm really excited to make a few shifts. And I've just realized as you're speaking that legumes have kind of found their way out of my diet. So I'm excited to pull those back in because they're delish if you cook them nicely.
Bring back the beans, Kate.
I know, bring back the beans, tootie booty.
Don't say that.
I'm guessing that probably means I need work on my microbiome. So good. So personally, I've had a little bit of a gripe with how many supplements can be prescribed preconception. And I know that I've very much had that experience personally, and I've also seen it in pretty much all of my clients. And, you know, this often does carry over into pregnancy. Personally, I believe, and this is my personal belief, that we need to focus on making changes to our diet first. I know that it's not always possible, and I'm very much speaking generally here, but what do we want to make sure we have in our diet daily, weekly, etc., preconception? And ultimately, what do we have to supplement?
Britt, I'm going to let you dive into this one.
Yeah, so it's a tricky one. There's a few issues here. So, I mean, in terms of supplementation, at the bare minimum, every woman should be taking a prenatal multivitamin that contains 400 micrograms of folic acid, 150 micrograms of iodine, and that's at the bare minimum. So ideally, we want a multi that has B12 because we know that high-dose folic acid supplementation can mask B12 deficiency, and B12 is also important for neural tube defects. We know that women aren't consuming enough choline daily, and choline's important for neural tube defect risk reduction as well. There's a whole complex of nutrients that women need that we just aren't getting enough through our food. I see iron deficiency daily in my clinic. I see vitamin D deficiency really frequently. And I think with all the increased lockdowns and we're kind of spending less and less time outdoors, so we're reducing our exposure to sunlight, which we get vitamin D from for free. So it's always better to get it from food or sunlight if you can. But certainly supplementation fills in those gaps where our diet has left off and our lifestyle is kind of hindered. Men should also be taking a prenatal multi as well. We know there's not enough things like selenium. Selenium is a really important mineral for men's fertility too, as is zinc. So really men need to be taking a prenatal multi too. There is some new research that's coming through saying that men should also be taking a folic acid supplement in that preconception phase.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, so it helps. You know, they provide 50% of the genetic material, so it only makes sense that we're supporting their synthesis of DNA and their methylation cycle too through folic acid supplementation, B12 supplementation, etc. And then also giving them those antioxidant nutrients and micronutrients to help with sperm health, like the zincs and the seleniums, and also the omega-3 fatty acids.
So that's, and I think like for too long, the responsibility has been on the woman for conception. And, you know, I remember reading recently, and I can't remember what study this was, but that the decline in male sperm and, you know, the sperm count is like really rapid, that in potentially like 100 to 150 years, there'll be no sperm if it continues at this rate. Like, I was just baffled when I read this, and I will try and track it down. But I think it's really beautiful to actually consider that it is a team effort. Like, it's not just on the woman. So, yeah, it's really great to hear that. I also wanted to bring up that conversation around folic acid. So I have the MTHFR gene mutation, and so folic acid is a big no-no for me. I wanted to get your thoughts around that, and if you can kind of add anything to that conversation for anyone who's maybe kind of heard, like, don't do folic acid, do folic acid, and they're feeling confused around that.
Yeah, absolutely. This is my favorite topic to talk about. So I'm so glad you brought it up, Kate.
Yay.
I think the first thing to point out is I think it's the public health message is very clear. So women of reproductive age should be taking 400 micrograms of folic acid. This is to help reduce their risk of having a child with neural tube defects. So Not everyone's going to be able to go see a specialist doctor or a naturopath or a nutritionist to find out whether they have the MTHFR gene mutation, nor is it indicated in a lot of instances. We know that, you know, there is a good proportion of the population that does carry one or two copies of this genetic condition. Well, it's not even a condition, it's just a genetic allele. So, you know, a slightly different, the way you metabolize your folic acid is slightly different, or maybe slightly slower than other people, for instance. So I think, yeah, for me, it's like, okay, the public health message, don't create fear around taking folic acid supplementation because it does prevent neural tube defects in the vast majority of people. There are people who have MTHFR, and it's their decision along with their clinician to decide whether they take a methyl form of folate or even a folinic acid, which might be better absorbed by them. But unless you have a compound variant or you know, one of the more serious variants, it's really not going to make a massive difference. And the other part of that conversation is the cofactors. So it's not just about folic acid. We know that vitamin B12 also helps to prevent neural tube defects, as does choline. There are a whole range of other nutrients that are equally as important in that methylation cycle that help in preventing neural tube defects and helping those people with, you know, genetic mutations like the MTHFR, or there are other ones called like COMT, there are so many to really support their methylation cycle. So yeah, that's my comment on that.
Yeah, and I think that that's like obviously really highlighting that what we're sharing today is going to be, you know, the more kind of general view of what we can be doing. And when it comes to specific individual needs, that the best course of action is to speak to somebody who specializes in that area, if that is an option for you. And, you know, I think as well, and I'm not sure if it's the same for you guys, but being the space that I'm working in, and particularly working with women who are going through challenges with conception, MTHFR does show up pretty commonly with my clients because they have had issues conceiving, and sometimes that is part of the picture. So I'm aware that I'm generally speaking to a part of the population that the percentage of my clients, it is probably higher that this is a factor, whereas the general population, it isn't to the same degree. But yeah, I really think that if this is, you know, something that you're concerned about, obviously speaking to a professional is going to be the best way to find out the best option for you. But I feel like you've really cleared up any questions that people might have about whether, you know, I guess that really definitive, like one being good, one being bad, isn't always the case, like we've spoken about just earlier as well.
Not at all. And it also links back into that, you know, supplement question that you just asked as well about, you know, Jack and I see complex fertility cases, whether it's male or female fertility. And sometimes there's just no way around not giving them a bunch of supplements. You know, there is robust evidence for giving things like CoQ10, vitamin E, for helping with egg quality, and high dose zinc for sperm health, and just really tailoring what supplements that couple needs in order to for them to have a successful pregnancy and ultimately bring home a healthy baby. So I know a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want to take lots of supplements, I hate taking pills, but our soil's not what it used to be. You know, we're having babies a lot later than what we really should be. I mean, a lot of the time it's not a choice. It's, you know, it just, yeah, unfortunately, you know, that's just how it happens. So, but it's all these factors that feed into, okay, well, we're going to have to support our egg quality and our sperm health. And it is more complex.
And I think the next layer to that as well is, you know, it's obviously our personal goals are, you know, when I'm speaking to clients and listeners here, is to conceive and birth a beautiful, healthy baby. But the knock-on effect from that is that if your baby is coming into the world depleted in certain areas, you can only anticipate that, you know, when the time comes that they maybe want to have children, that that's also a factor. And so it's not just about the outcome of like the birth of the healthy baby. There's also the long-term outcome of the, you know, that you guys spoke about right at the start of the conversation today, is the, you know, the health imprint on our child for their whole life as well. And then how that, you know, impacts generationally. So it is a really, and I don't say that to put pressure on women at all. It is, but it is a big thing. It really is.
It is really important. Totally. And I think people need to absolutely see it as a big picture. I think we really get caught up in looking at these sort of finite periods, and the more that we draw health, fertility, dietary things out into the big picture, the easier it is to wrap our heads around the changes or the needs that we have, or things that we need to do for ourselves now. So big picture always.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. It's something that I teach a lot and something I'm really passionate about at the moment, is being really clear on what that long-term alignment looks like in your life and making sure that you're making choices towards that rather than that short-term gratification. And this is no exception. Yeah. Yeah. So I've kind of alluded to this a little bit, and I can't wait to get your take on this. So for the majority of my life, I've always felt like I'm pretty confident in my choices around nourishment. Like, I'm pretty confident that I know what serves my body and how to nourish it. But over the last few years, and it may have also been aligned with when I became a mother, and, you know, everything just gets thrown in the air and you're like, who am I? But I feel like over the last few years, I've seen so many mixed messages that are so confusing around what is the best way to nourish my body. I'd love to know what your fundamentals are for nourishment during our reproductive years as a whole, and what do you wish you could tell all the women in their reproductive years about nourishing themselves? What do you wish we all knew?
This is a good question, because there really are so many mixed messages around health these days. It's really hard to navigate. And as women, I think we're fed so many ideas around eliminating this food group or that to improve our health. So that can be really tricky as well. But the most researched and most supportive diet for reproductive health in both women and men is actually the Mediterranean dietary pattern. And we really reinforce it's a dietary pattern, because if you throw diet in there, people somewhat feel that it's something you go on and off, which is really not the case. The Mediterranean dietary pattern is about laying some really simple but really health-promoting foundations for women across their reproductive lifespan. So if you'd like, I can run you through the fundamentals of this.
I would love that.
So every day, the focus is on consuming plenty of vegetables, whole grains, fruits, nuts, seeds, extra virgin olive oil, and our heroes of fertility, which we've mentioned and banged on about a few times already throughout the podcast, legumes. So chickpeas, lentils, kidney beans, what have you there. Then just a few times each week, enjoy some fish and seafood, yogurt and cheese, and poultry. Keep to a minimum, but enjoy moderation, as we've mentioned again before, red meat and certainly refined sugars. And again, just drink to your health. Focus on water, fresh pressed vegetable juices, keeping those sugary sodas to a minimum. Just moderate your intake of caffeine and enjoy alcohol every now and then. But certainly most Australians are drinking every day of the week, and a lot more than they should. So just bringing it back down to some really simple foundations in your diet there. And that's all it is. And I think if people have that outline, it makes it really easy to then incorporate that into your everyday and to start thinking about this. Like, I think about this a lot as a mom, and I have two girls and one boy, but certainly what are the things I wish I was taught when I was just starting puberty? Because that's really when we want to start helping our girls understand what they can do to support their health and nutrition throughout these years ahead of them. So if we can do it with those foundations, then, you know, there's a great opportunity ahead for them.
And it's interesting that you bring up puberty and, you know, what you wish you knew. Because I feel like I wish I knew about BPA plastic a long time ago. You know, BPA plastic is in our takeaway coffee cups, our, you know, food takeaway containers. We're exposed to it every single day, and you're never going to be able to avoid being exposed to it 100%, but certainly reducing your exposure, because it is a reproductive toxicant. So I think about this all the time for my kids. I'm sort of, you know, if I give them a packaged yogurt or a, you know, something that came in a plastic tub, I'm like, what's the cumulative effect of this plastic exposure going to have on their fertility in, say, 20 years' time? It's really quite scary. And the effect is in men, well, girls and boys, and men and women. And it's been, BPA plastic has also been banned from baby products. Like, they do know how toxic it is.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because we've just seen this big recall of the sunscreens with the carcinogens in them that many people were talking about for years, and it's finally followed through into the mainstream. And, you know, I think the fact that it's banned for babies, like, why is it not banned for everyone?
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that you bring up sunscreen is interesting too. Our topical products that we're using can also contain endocrine disruptors. So I think about spraying that. What was the name of that deodorant that you'd use? It was like,
oh my God,
vanilla
impulse.
Yes. Vanilla impulse. Imagine
the smell of my childhood.
Imagine the effect that had on our hormones as teenagers. Like, this is the stuff Absolutely. That they should be teaching in sex ed as well. You know, like, it should be life and hormones 101.
I know, it's like, don't get pregnant. It should be like, don't get pregnant right now, but when you do, this is going to be important.
Yeah, isn't it? You're taught for so many years how not to fall pregnant, but in those early years, you're not really taught the fundamentals of what you need to be doing when you fall pregnant or before you fall pregnant, which is really important. So having these conversations, like, that's where we need to start, you know, planting these seeds for parents to have with their kids, or to be planting seeds and having these conversations with your partner or your girlfriends or whoever it may be as well.
Yeah, I love that so much. And, like, ultimately we need to learn this lesson as in our generation in order to teach our children, because, you know, we didn't get taught, and it's our responsibility to, you know, learn what actually serves us so that we can impart that with our children. You know, it's not the, I mean, the way I see it, it's not the responsibility of the school system. They are as they are, and it takes a long time for those systems to change, whereas, you know, we can pivot as parents. And, you know, if we don't learn it ourselves, there's no way we're going to be able to pass that information on to our children.
Totally.
So once we do get pregnant, how does our nutritional need change from preconception? I'm going to take a guess that the Mediterranean diet is still foundational, you know, according to research. But, you know, what needs to change in that time? And, like, also first trimester, like, hot chips, you know, bread, like, survival. Like, talk to me about that.
Oh, yeah. And that's, you know, we speak about this a lot as well. Your first trimester, you know, you might have all good intentions of maintaining this really healthy, beautiful, abundant diet, but you just don't feel like it. And that's why supplementation is so important, because it's picking up on your body's demands for those micronutrients where diet certainly can't. When you just, you know, some days you can't stomach anything but dry crackers. So things do really change a lot. But yeah, coming back to the foundations, which is your Mediterranean diet, I think one of the things that always takes people by surprise, there's a few elements to this that we could discuss, but one of the things that takes a lot of women and couples by surprise is actually the caloric demands in pregnancy. So in the first trimester, there's actually no need to be increasing the amount of food that you're consuming, even though that's when you probably feel like those hot chips or all of those comfort foods. There's this idea that eating for two means you need to bump up overall food intake. That's really not the case. Eating for two comes down to how you're consuming micronutrients to support you and your baby throughout pregnancy. So in your first trimester, there's no need to be bumping up your caloric intake. But when it comes to the second trimester, you actually do need to start increasing your caloric intake each day. And then the second, it's recommended around an additional 350 calories you add in each day. And then in the third trimester, an additional 450 calories you add in each day to support the growth of your baby at these times. And when we say add in these calories, we really want to reinforce that there's a big difference, again, of, you know, consuming milkshakes and Mars bars to bump up these calories versus things like having, you know, an extra serve of nut butter or an extra handful of nuts, or, you know, using tahini as a dressing to bump up caloric intake, some of those extra healthy fats that we've spoken about. Sorry, not tahini, because that's not allowed in pregnancy, sorry. But, you know, using things like avocado or a full-fat Greek yogurt and bumping up caloric intake that way. So you're actually adding valuable nutrients in as well as those calories to support growth. So that's really important. And then with regard to other nutritional changes and dietary changes that we want our pregnant women to think about, there's obviously an importance of understanding food safety. So avoiding foods which will present a salmonella or listeria risk. So your pre-cut fruit and vegetables, which you might have relied heavily on to have a really good healthy diet previously, being conscious of those, things like raw fish, raw eggs, deli meats, tahini and hummus, which I'll reinforce now because I made a slip saying add tahini before. They need to be avoided because they've got a bacterial risk. And then, you know, the other culprits like your soft unpasteurized cheeses, raw shellfish, or your ready cooked prawns, things like that. And then as we did touch on previously as well, be aware when it comes to food safety of some of the toxic contaminants in your food from, as Britt mentioned, the BPA in your plastic containers that you might have from takeaway food or in bottled drinks, also mercury and, you know, your deep sea fish like your swordfish, or being conscious of which fruits and vegetables are higher in your pesticides and herbicides, because all of these things can really add up when it comes to toxicity in your diet, and it's really important to be aware of this when you're pregnant.
You've just actually reminded me on that last note there of the environmental working group and the Clean 15 and the Dirty Dozen that they put out each year. Is like I've always gone to that as a good indication of like what produce to prioritize getting organic and which ones tend to be okay if they are, you know, as far as what they're exposed to from a pesticides point of view. Is that something that you guys support? Yeah.
It's a really great guide, and it's really easy for people to jump on and download that as well and just have it in your phone or in your purse or what have you when you're shopping as a reference.
I'll pop that in the show notes so that everyone can find that. Just like a little cheeky kind of extra question around this. You were talking about the calorie intake and the different trimesters. What does that look like in the fourth trimester?
In terms of the fourth trimester, not every woman in their fourth trimester will breastfeed. So for women who are breastfeeding, there's an increased caloric requirement of 700 calories a day. And again, I want to emphasize that it's not milkshakes and Mars bars. The reason why there is an increased caloric intake is because there's an increased intake for things like protein, choline, DHA, your micronutrients, so your vitamin B12, your zinc, et cetera, et cetera. So it is important that you're getting these, you know, this increased energy from nutrient-dense foods. With the fourth trimester as well, we want to consider wound healing. So whether you've had a C-section, episiotomy, tears, we really need to support wound healing. So we lean into nutrients like protein, so getting enough protein through your legumes or your animal proteins, eggs, fish, things like that. Also making sure that you're getting enough iron. So post-birth, your iron requirements and during lactation actually as well, your iron requirements go back to that of a everyday woman who it's the same requirement. But women who have C-sections, they do tend to have a high level of blood loss. And if you've had a vaginal delivery and there has been, you know, quite a lot of blood loss or hemorrhage, you just want to be conscious that you are eating enough iron-rich foods to help build up that blood again, and also to support your energy levels.
So interesting. And so I wanted to ask you, so for women who aren't breastfeeding, does their intake go back to that of like, you know, preconception as far as calories?
So in terms of calories, if you're not breastfeeding, yeah, the caloric requirement would be the same. And with iron, as soon as your period resumes, whether you're breastfeeding or not, you need to be getting adequate iron, because you're obviously going to be having that blood loss through your monthly menstrual period as well. Whereas when you're lactating, your iron requirement is actually a little bit less because you're not losing blood.
That was the time where I found myself deplete postpartum. Once my period came back, I breastfed my son until about 1.5. And my period came back at 10 months. And up until then, my energy was great, no issues whatsoever. Once that came back, I felt myself deplete. I lost hair, my iron went down, and I wasn't aware of like the correlation. Obviously now I am, and next time I'll be very aware to make sure I'm maintaining that. But I feel like that's pretty common, that delay can kind of happen, like as far as energy levels, and not really realizing that that's why, when, you know, when our period does return.
Yeah, totally. And it's so easy for people to say, oh, it's hormonal.
Oh my gosh, tell me about it. Well, the baby's been up, you're just tired.
Yeah, and iron deficiency can look a lot like postnatal depression as well. So if you are finding that you're having mood changes and you're not quite yourself, I would certainly be looking at your iron levels, your B12 levels, and also your thyroid status to make sure that there isn't an underlying cause for why you're feeling this way.
Yeah, amazing advice, amazing advice. I actually did an episode a little while ago with Natalie Douglas, who specializes, she's a nutritionist who specializes in thyroid health. I'm not sure if you know of her, but I'll link that in the episode as well for anyone who is curious about that. So to wrap up today, I would love for you guys to share with us a few easy go-to meal or snack ideas for preconception and pregnancy that women can take away. They're listening today, like on the weekend, they can go grab the stuff and they can start to make a shift right away.
Juicy. I love food.
And like, so, let's be honest, I need some inspiration on what to cook for dinner.
You know, so we, as part of each of our courses with nutrition for preconception and fertility and nutrition for pregnancy, we have meal planners. So there's a male and female fertility meal planner for preconception. And then in the pregnancy course, we have first, second, and third trimester meal planners, but these are all also available to buy from the site individually. So there's that. Because we do understand that people sometimes don't know where to start. And certainly if you've come from a diet that might have been, you know, lots of takeaway because you work long corporate hours and things like that, and you need to start making some shifts, you need a bit of a guideline. And you don't want to be eating the same thing day in, day out. So we need to keep everyone inspired and creative when it comes to health and fertility. Perhaps maybe I'll just run you through what a day on a plate might look like if you're looking to boost your fertility or if you're pregnant. They can sort of cross over one into the other. Well, I'll do one that will cross over with easily. So breakfast, you know, we talk a lot about the importance of whole grains. So getting things like overnight oats into breakfast with extra seeds to add those beautiful fats and fiber, and a piece of seasonal fruit at brekkie would be a good one, and a good, really easy way to start the day as well, because you can prep it the night before. We love snacks like whole fruit with a bit of natural peanut butter on them. You're getting good sources of choline through the peanuts or the peanut butter or whatever your seasonal fruit is. And if you are a coffee lover, have your coffee mid-morning, try and have it, you know, before 11 a.m. so that you're not affecting your sleep and circadian rhythms in the later part of the day, because sleep is also really important in fertility, health, and pregnancy. Obviously it's harder in pregnancy, but so we've got to do everything that we can to make sure that you're getting it. Lunch, you know, I certainly know as a working mum, and I want something quick and easy. So we really try to reinforce having things, you know, that can be either reheated, that are healthy for people to do, and that can set them up for the rest of the day, and not having you crave sugar or overeating at next meal. So things like a frittata with lots of veggies in it. Again, eggs, great source of choline. Or getting our lentils in this part of the day. So something like a lentil and masala soup is really delicious. I love adding a bit of extra brown rice or quinoa in there. Arvo snack, again, try and come back to getting protein and good quality micronutrients in there. So things like roasted chickpeas and some veggie sticks, maybe some cheddar. And that's a good one because obviously soft cheeses and those unpasteurized cheeses are a risk during pregnancy. So if we can just have people just having a little bit of cheddar. That's a really good one. And then dinner, let's look at getting some of those good quality fatty fish into your dinner. So a couple of times a week. So things like a salmon or an ocean trout or a mackerel, things like that, with herby rice, lots of greens, so that you're bumping up your veggies in there as well. And this, again, is coming back to those foundations we've laid with the Mediterranean dietary pattern as well. So it's a really simple way
Beautiful.
To approach it.
Sounds delicious.
Well, I hope that's whet your appetite a little bit. But yeah, also I think it's important that people realize that that's how simple it can be, that, you know, we don't need to spend hours and hours in the kitchen, but really we can simplify things and still have a big impact on our health and fertility through what we're doing in our diet.
I love that so much. And I think, you know, what you guys are doing with giving people that ability to really resource themselves with the information and the inspiration so then they can, you know, run with that in the future is amazing. Mm-hmm. So for anybody who's listening and they're just loving you guys and they want more of this, how can they find you and how can they work with you?
Oh, hi. So I was too busy thinking, I think we forgot to say you can have dark chocolate for dessert.
Of course. I did have a dessert in there, but I
So you can find us at dayonefertility.com. We're also on Instagram, so at dayonefertility. And then individually, Jack is, what are you on?
Thanks. Wife. No, so you're best to find both of us at Day One Fertility, and then I'm at Brown Paper Nutrition, and Britt is at Whole Food Healing.
Amazing. So good. I will make sure we have everything linked in the show notes, and definitely tune in because you guys have got some beautiful programs and offerings available that I know my audience are going to love as well. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with me today. It's been so beautiful to have you both on the show. I cannot wait to share this with my audience, and I'm really excited to implement some of these things into my life myself as
well. Excellent. Thanks so much, Kate.
It was such a pleasure.
Thank you for being here. Your presence is received with deep gratitude. If you loved this episode, I invite you to follow or subscribe to the Awaken Pregnancy podcast on your favorite platform. And if this podcast is having an impact on your life, one significant enough that you feel changed for being here, I invite you to participate in a two-way exchange. Leave a 5-star review in your heartfelt words on Apple Podcasts, or make a donation to Kate Cattle and the Awaken Pregnancy podcast via the link in the notes for this episode. Thank you for walking this mamahood journey alongside me. I will see you next time.